This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
And welcome to our podcast, Recall the Midwife. We watch an episode of Call the Midwife and talk about it. Today, we are discussing Series 6, Episode 6. I'm Alex.
I'm Becky.
I'm Jen. A reminder that this week's episode deals with female genital alteration and mental health issues. So if those topics are ones you would prefer to skip this time, we understand and hope you join us for the next one.
Can I skip this week's, by the way? Because I've found this really hard. Sorry, carry on, Bex.
You don't get topped out, sorry.
This week's episode is set against the backdrop of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Sister Mary Cynthia remains at Lynchmere Hospital, much to Sister Monica Jones' distress, but she's making progress and is moved onto a general ward, which means that Sister Julianne and Sister Monica Joan are able to visit and eventually bring her home to Nanata's house. We meet Nadifa, whose husband expects to send her back to Somaliland to give birth to their first child. But when she starts experiencing pain, she's seen by Nurse Dyer, who informs her that the baby is due any day. When Nadifa comes along to the clinic, they discover that she's been circumcised, which means that she won't be able to give birth without medical intervention. Nadifa is traumatised by the procedure that was carried out when she was a child. So when she goes into labour, she hides it. But with Nurse Dyer's help, she gives birth to a daughter. Meanwhile, Cynthia continues to struggle and Dr. Turner arranges for her to be admitted to Northfield, where he also received treatment. Dr. Turner and Sheila move house. Delia pines for Patsy. Trixie rebuffs Christopher's advances, but with the threat of nuclear war hanging over Poplar, she agrees to a date, and Sister Winifred is still learning to drive.
Whoa. Girls, we haven't said this in a long time, but I just felt like after watching last night's episode that I had to say this again. Throwback to our earlier podcast episodes, but like, this episode had so much going on.
Jen, we literally say it in every single podcast. Every single time.
I feel like we haven't said in a while, but I just, like, oh my gosh, I felt like really overwhelmed. I was like, oh, this and the Cuban Missile Crisis. Like, I just was like, wow, like it just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then like just storyline after storyline. And I was like, oh my word, what's going on here? So
I genuinely nearly fainted like 3 times.
Oh, this genuinely. Episode was a tough one. I got queasy myself, which I'm not usually queasy lady, but.
I thought this episode might be triggering for you, Jen, because of Sheila and Dr. Turner moving house.
It was.
Yeah, let's do updates. Jen?
Oh, okay. Well, dear sweet listeners, I have moved. I have officially moved. Yay! We closed on our house a couple weeks ago, and since then it has been crazy getting settled and unpacking boxes. And when I literally saw the Turners going through their move, I was like, I should have put a trigger warning in about that for myself, because it was like, you know, and she was like, oh, well, you know, I've packed like, you know, one box each for you and basically for Tim and Patrick, Dr. Turner, because they have to like give away a lot of their stuff before they go. And Tim said something like, he was like, why is you and Angela's box like so small and ours is so big? And she's like, well, we don't have the tendency towards hoarding like you two. And I was just like, oh my God, the roasting. But in our family, that's my mom is the Dr. Turner and I'm the Sheila. So anyways, but yes, I have moved and it's all wonderful and it's all horrible and terrible and, you know, a huge headache.
Oh, lovely time, though. We're looking at your house right now. We've had a tour. We love it.
Yeah, we had a tour last week, because what we also did last week, listeners, we lost an episode. So then we started to record the episode again.
And then it just randomly turned up.
Which was awful. The re-record was awful. But then
it was terrible.
Partway through, the old episode popped up. So then we just got a house tour.
Yeah. So, last week's episode was so terrible because I was in the world's worst mood, and I shall tell you for why. So you may recall I did a netball injury, which was I don't know how many weeks ago on the actual podcast, but in real life it's coming up to 11 weeks. And basically I found out that I need a whole ACL reconstruction surgery. So they've got to graft some of my hamstring, and it's just an absolute nightmare just from netball, and also a meniscus surgery as well. So I'm really pleased. I'm in a lot better mood than I was last week. So yeah, I was just a bit really tough in shock and a bit angry last week. Yeah.
But you do get 2 weeks off post surgery.
Yeah.
When you can sit with your knee up.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna have to. Yeah.
Yeah, so in 4 months, when you get 2 weeks off, it's going to be really nice. That's going to be great.
I'm going to love it. I'm going to love that. I'm going to love being in horrific pain.
Well, the thing is, it's like, our two situations are not really analogous, but I'm just going to like force them to be for this one little moment. Like, it is really wonderful, obviously, getting reparative surgery that will then bring you back to health. And like, it is really wonderful, like moving into a new house and like getting to be settled and all that kind of stuff like that. But the thing you have to go through to get there is really, really tough. And girls, when I tell you that, like, we had a plumbing issue, we had a this issue, like we had to get appliances, then we had to do that. Like, it's been basically like one thing after another for like these first 2 weeks, and like for the moment I think we've got it all figured out, like, but oh, it's just it's a hard jump to get through.
Jen is, for our listeners, Jen is basically living the turn as well.
I am.
Life, because you've moved into a 1960s
I have yeah. When I saw their house, when I saw the price of their house, did you guys see the for sale sign? I was like, my eyeballs fell out of my head officially. But yeah, basically, like, we both moved into a house built at the exact same time.
I also live in a 60s house.
I love it. I think houses in this era are beautiful, and it's one of the things that really sold us on this home. And one of my favorite features in the whole house is I have a teal bathroom. Like, all the tiles are teal and they're so beautiful. And anyways,
we can actually vouch for that.
Yeah.
Now, shall we go on to
the episode?
Actual Call the Midwife, what we're actually here to talk about. People and never listened to us are like, who are these people? What are they talking about?
And why do we care about their personal lives at all?
And I think we should start with Nadifa's storyline just to get it over. Because Alex nearly fainted 3 times.
I just can't.
I will say they did a good job of tackling a really, really tough issue in probably the best way in terms of, like, it was kind of like a tell don't show kind of energy with it. Now, was it still really, really like tough? Because obviously your imagination will do its own work, but like, I mean, hats off for even like going there, because this is a tough topic.
I think because to me that it's completely alien, and I also didn't want to Google any pictures, but I thought it was clever use of the doll.
Yes.
Yeah. Very much, very much.
Yeah.
Now, I actually do have some experience. When I say experience, not physically. When we were at uni in the second year, Jen, when you'd gone back to America, we were living there where we were. And I did women's studies. I didn't do women's studies as a main subject, but I did a few lectures of women's studies. And one was a film on female genital mutilation, is what they called it, you know, 20 years ago.
At the time, yeah.
Yeah. And I got to the first basic title, and then I fainted, fell into the aisle, because I was sat on an aisle seat, whacked my head really hard, and basically woke up with blood everywhere, with loads of people all surrounding me being like, are you okay? And I ran out. I must have looked absolutely insane. I just ran out of there and then met our friend who we weren't really that friends with, like this boy we knew. And he was like, with a head injury, blood pouring down my face. And he was like panicking, like, are you okay? And he took me home on the bus and took me back to our house to make sure I was okay. And you were there, Bex, do you remember?
Yeah, I do. I do now. You've reminded me of it.
You were at Bex. You were at the house already.
Yeah. She was at the house, and they kind of just took me in, and I had to just sit down, and they tried to make me go to the hospital, and I was just really embarrassed, and it was just really awful. So I don't actually know anything about the subject because I just fainted and ran out.
You got to the title card of the movie, and then you were like, "Nope, I'm not doing this at all."
I'm just the world's most squeamish. Even if it was like a leg injury or anything, it just sends me west.
Yeah, well
in terms of terminology, I think FGM is still used because the NHS, the World Health Organization, Barnardo's, the NSPCC, UNICEF, everyone's still using it.
Okay, I switched it to alteration just because I'd heard some things about, you know, because part of it that's tough is it is a cultural norm and a cultural tradition for the people that do it. And I have heard that over now, and listeners, just to say, if anyone knows more about this and we're getting anything wrong, please feel free to correct. But I have heard that it's been much and much less practiced in recent years, and that it's, you know, started to really go away. And for people who are in that culture or in that, you know, kind of group, I don't, you know, whatever. I mean, obviously they're the guides in terms of like what the thing is, but I mean, it's still the range of stories that you hear about it, if you, you know, kind of talk about it at all, are very vast. You know what I mean? Like there's some that are much, you know, quote, easier, kinder, whatever you want to say. And then there are some that are really, really very tough, you know, painful stories to hear about the kind of person who's doing the procedure, like what's done to the, you know, person who's having the procedure done to them. And then, you know, even Nadifa, like she says, like, it was done to me and then my legs were tied together until I was healed, which, well, I mean, oh my
let's
God.
Let's talk about, like, Nadifa, oh my God. While we're here. Okay, so for context, Mrs. Farah, or Nadifa, she's a lady from Somaliland, and she is staying with her husband over here. So he's a sailor, and she's quite unusual in her culture. Apparently most people stay, but she was like, maybe their husband's not as fit as mine. I'm not really sure I agree on that. Anyway, but she thinks
she said,
she's
she
seven
said
months.
Most people in my culture do what?
Stay at home.
Oh, right. Yes. Stay at home. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So she thinks she's 7 months pregnant, but Valerie sees her because she thinks she's actually closer to nine because she has a bit of a turn, doesn't she? And her husband goes to get someone. But also, the fact is that she's supposed to be going away. They got a ticket that morning, and she was supposed to be going back to Somaliland to give birth.
Yeah.
But imagine that boat ride, heavily, heavily pregnant.
Oh, girls, don't get me started. Like, can you imagine anything worse than being, even if she was only 7 months pregnant, than being 7 months pregnant, being plonked on a boat for however many weeks to get back down there?
Well, I get seasick, so I can't imagine.
Oh, I get so seasick too. Yeah, no, and no amount of Dramamine or those like weird plastic bracelets are going to do anything. No.
I was
off balance when you're pregnant too, because your tummy is so far out. So you would like fall over if the boat was rocking. Oh, no.
No, I was quite annoyed by her because she was so unprepared. Like, she literally had nothing. And then later on in the episode, somebody else gave her some nappies. But now I realise that she thought she was only 7 months. So actually,
yeah, she thought she was going to have everything abroad. Yeah. Like, she thought she was going to go back to Somaliland. So she's also
but
got.
She didn't want to go back. No, she was. If she could have, she would have hidden that ticket.
Yeah, well, exactly. But she also lived with her little sister, Decca. And I don't know why she was going to school here. They didn't really explain that.
But Decca was like, she looks like she was in her 20s at least. And then Decca looked like she was like 10.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously huge age gap there. So I didn't think it was
her sister.
I still
don't understand why
she
was going to school here if Nadifa was only staying here for a few weeks.
I think Decca was created as a character to illustrate the storyline, not because it was like, oh, this makes sense. You know what I mean? Like, I think,
yeah.
Like,
but I don't think she was just staying here for a few weeks. I think she was living here permanently. She would go have the baby and come back.
No, but Decca was gonna. Right. She was living here permanently as well, and we're like, well, why was she even here at all? But the thing is, like, I don't think that was like, what I think they created the character of Decca to facilitate the story, because she was a young lady who was so interested in medicine, like growing up in like modern England and Western England and like all that kind of stuff. And she was going to school and she wanted to be a nurse and she cared about everything medical and, you know, all that kind of stuff like that. And then in the storyline, she is being called back to Somaliland to have the procedure so that she can be, you know, like appropriate as a woman.
Clean is what they said for their culture.
Yeah, clean and, you know, like good for her husband and all that kind of stuff like that. So I think to me, Deka like was a character that existed to kind of show the juxtaposition between modern Western culture. And I don't want to take the word modern away from the Somali culture, but like older traditional practices of that like homeland, which is Somaliland in this case, and kind of like how the old world was meeting the new world. And then it was kind of clashing. It felt like all of us it was clashing a little bit.
So anyway, Nadifa goes to clinic because Valerie's checked up on her. She's like, come to clinic on a Tuesday just so we can keep an eye on you, just to see how you're doing, because obviously they've discovered she's 9 months pregnant and not seven, so she's not had
she
any
didn't have any prenatal checkups. Care either so,
exactly,
I mean, they don't
so
know
she had no checkups anything. So Valerie does an examination and she's never seen anything like it. So luckily Barbara's with her. She shows Barbara. Now Barbara has also not seen anything either. So they discuss.
I thought they both could have had a better poker face though with Nadifa, to be honest.
They never have a good
poker. They were like, oh my God. And it was just like, why are you scaring this poor woman? Like, come on now. I know they were shocked, but.
So they refer her to the London where they go and see a man.
Cuthbert's.
Oh, is it the Cuthbert's? Sorry. Where they go to see a man doctor, which she's very uncomfortable with, because in Somaliland, a woman does the procedure, not a man.
Yeah.
So she's very uncomfortable with that. And
well, and just generally too, like having a man she doesn't know, like look at her and like, you know, like do all of that. I mean, it was that's very verboten.
Actually, that's true. All my gynecologists have been men. Not that I've had thousands that make me sound like
really?
Yeah.
Well, I've never had a man gynecologist. Did you didn't get to choose?
No. I've had
it's like when Gloria was in when Sheila was in hospital and Gloria was in the bed next to her, and it was the same specialist, Mr. Kendley. And he just like there's no I don't know, it's awful when you have to.
Oh, I wouldn't have a man gynecologist, I'll tell you that much. No, I would not do it.
Well, anyway, she went there, he said, what, the second any labour starts, you need to come straight back here. We need to do an episiotomy, an elective episiotomy, and, you know, she needs to go into labour here, you know, the second it starts. Anyway, Valerie goes to make her a cup of tea, because, you know, that solves everything. And
can I just pause you for 1 second?
It does help, let's be honest.
No, I just made a note, though, because, like, to me, that was a real, like, miss for Valerie. And, like, I love Val, but I'm just saying, like, I wrote this note, the scene with the doctor, Nurse Dyer missed it in that moment. And I really think she did, because Nadifa was in there with whatever that doctor, like, having him, like, you know, say all the things he was going to say. And he wasn't, like, he was actually comparatively nice than some of the other scenes with women previous where he's just basically like, oh, this, you know, human body needs this you know, like not even like it's a person laying on the table. But then like you could tell that Nadifa was so like upset, you know what I mean, like she was not in a good headspace when she was having that done. And then the doctor left and she was still had the skirt, you know, like just anyway, she still felt exposed and like very vulnerable and like I feel a bit traumatized. And then Valerie was like, okay, you know, like I could really like go for a cup of tea and a biscuit, like I'll get you one and everything. And she just like patted her hand and then like walked out of the room. And I was like, you're a little, I don't know, I just was like, talk to her, ask her how she's doing, like are you okay, what are you feeling, like is, you know, like,
you know what else I really liked about that scene though, when she walked into the hospital bed and she saw that she wasn't there anymore, she left a scarf conveniently for us to all know, like we're all really thick, like for us all to know, oh hang on, she's scarfed. There was Nadifa in this bed a minute ago, but in case you missed it, she's not there anymore, but a scarf is. One other thing that I really loved about this storyline was Deka. They were talking about Deka wanting to be a nurse, and Barbara was really loving her and saying how she saw her in her whenever she was younger, like she really sees herself in her from when she was younger. She said she would love anything to do with medical stuff, particularly venereal diseases. Loved it for like a vicar's daughter.
Oh, Barbara. Yeah.
So at this stage, Nadifa is very much, I think she's got PTSD.
Oh, same,
yeah,
same.
Definitely, 100%.
So going to the hospital, seeing Mr. Kenny, it's really triggered her. I do you think at that point she's gone into labour, or do you think that triggers her going into labour?
I don't know. I think maybe because it's around the time anyway. I think this panicking situation won't help. Running off won't help. Doing all that exercise to get out of the hospital. Yeah. You know, she's not gone at a slow pace, has she, to get out of there? Maybe running home basically won't have helped. And she does then go into labor. But Valerie then tries to knock on the door and no one's in, she thinks. But obviously she is in, but she doesn't want anyone knowing she's in. So she's there just kind of breathing on her own. Mm-hmm. Cue Decker coming home with Valerie because Decker was with Barbara and Valerie at the Nonata's house. So Valerie kind of comes home with her, finds her going into labour and gets an ambulance. Someone else is going to have to talk about this. I have to fast forward this. Yeah, I'm nearly fainted. So
I'm going to say something. So we're just going to quickly run through. So they're in the ambulance. Valerie is like, you cannot have this baby because it's going to be very bad if the baby tries to come out. And then she's like screaming and everything else. And then Valerie, like halfway to the hospital, she's like, okay, stop the ambulance. Like, we have to do something because there's no way that this baby's going to make it to the hospital for like the doctor. So then she does what she needs to do. I'm not going to say any more than that. And the baby is born. Not going to say any more than that. And they keep going. But here's my thing.
It's a healthy baby. It's a healthy girl.
It's a healthy, happy baby girl.
I need to say something. And I know this, I was like, don't listen, Alex, but you're going to have to edit this.
I'm going to have to edit this. Just do it. We're going to have a first live faint on a podcast. Carry on.
Nadeepa's really traumatized because she just keeps thinking back to the man with the knife. Yeah. It's the fact that Valerie's like, don't worry, I'm not going to use a knife. I'm going to use scissors.
Yeah. And it's like, is that really a difference?
No.
But here's my question, though. Like,
she's genuinely like, I'm hearing it for the first time, by the way, because I did have to fast forward. Carry on.
Oh, it's really great. And then the thing is, like, even the way Valerie died, like, it's just... I don't know, any woman watching it, any person I would think watching it would just be like, oh my God. But the thing that I kept wondering as I was watching this whole episode is like, okay, this is Nadeepa's cultural tradition. Like, she's gone through this, her sister's gone through this, her generations of women before her have gone through this. When the procedure is carried out and then she has when her genitalia looks the way that it looks and it's functioning the way that it's functioning, because they even said like it could create problems with like urinary tract infections, like problems with menstruation. Like, I mean, there's basic functioning that has to happen down there that is designed that way. We've evolved that way so that it can happen safely, so that everything's going to be able to work okay. And my thing is like, how did any of these people expect that this baby was going to come out? Because I mean, what she had down there was not going to be a viable thing for the childbirth. And I wish there was an explanation of what the cultural process or procedure or expectation is for like
childbirth,
because my thinking was, and this is because of the way Nadeepa acted after, is that basically they have to do another something to get the baby to come out, and then afterwards I guess there's quote a repair where they put you back to what you were before, I guess. I mean, sorry, I just, but the thing is, I just was like, how are women able to safely function as people with this thing? And I know that that makes me sound probably so ignorant and potentially insensitive of it, but I just,
well,
like,
also to be fair, like, her mum's got her and Decker, so she's obviously had multiple children,
right?
There's obviously
And an older sister too, because she says, my sister who's older than me was younger when it happened. She didn't have it so rough as I did.
And Valerie visits later because she's coming to check up on her, and she learns that Decker's going to be sent back because she's going to have the procedure done, which we spoke about earlier.
Yeah.
And Valerie is very incensed by this because obviously she sees the damage that it's done to Nadeepa. But well, I did love when Nadeepa stood up to Valerie, and because...
Same.
At the start, we called her Mrs. Barrett, and I'm not going to try and pronounce her name because I'm not going to be able to. But the fact that in her culture, they don't take the husband's name. So all the way through this, they've been referring to her as Mrs. Barrett, but actually that's not her name. She keeps her family's name.
And she was saying that women do the procedure, not men. It's not, you know, it's not a male-led
thing. It's a very you know, intense cultural conversation to have, because, you know, obviously we want to be understanding and sensitive that different cultures do different things.
Yeah,
than we do.
And respectful. Like, and I think that Valerie's terminology wasn't.
No, she was coming at it from a very kind of like, you know, gut reaction, like judgmental place, which I felt was good in the way that it made sense, you know, like for who everyone was in that context, they were all behaving kind of the way that it made the most sense for them to behave, especially for that time period. Like, I know the nurses and everything and the midwives are all very, very sensitive to their patients and are always like patient first and stuff like that. But like, you know, like cultural competency was not a thing back then. It just wasn't discussed. And so I think even though Valerie was clearly so caring and supportive of Miss Nadifa and did really want to be sensitive to not re-traumatizing her and like also caring for her and her baby in a healthful way and everything. She also couldn't kind of put aside the fact that this procedure was really, you know, like, I guess, pun intended, like foreign to her, and she didn't understand it and she didn't agree with it.
Well, she didn't really listen to the big impassioned speech that the Nadifa said, because then she went to the boat to try and stop Decker going, looking so angry. And just as per, my daughter walked in on that bit and was like, why is she so angry? Why is she so angry at her going on a boat?
I don't know if she was trying to stop her or she was just going to see her off.
I don't know. It just looked.
Well, I don't know. They would stop her.
My daughter's interpretation was that she was angry.
Oh, I think they were angry.
Yeah, she was angry, but I think she was just going to see. Like, she wasn't going to suddenly take Decker into her custody. And
no, no, no.
Oh, it did break my heart, though, the way Decker waved at them and said she'd see them after a holiday, because she doesn't know what she's going back to.
Which is annoying, really, because she'd be interested in it.
She would. And I think that's the issue with this, because it is a fine line, because it's the fact that this is no one's having this procedure out of an informed decision.
Yeah.
It's being done to a child who at varying ages.
Well, and I thought Decca, I mean, again, because I thought she was like 10 or 11, I thought, oh my God, like, is that usually the age that they do it? Like, because that would be extremely traumatizing for a child of that age. Like, you would know everything that was being done to you and like, oh, I don't know. I don't know. It was hard for me.
It was flu jab without kicking off. So,
well, she can't even lose a tooth, can she?
Oh
yeah.
Oh,
I know. Not the tooth, but like. But here's the thing, though, that I thought about when Valerie was kind of going, when she was kind of criticizing Miss Farah, and they had that kind of fight where Miss Farah like said back to her, is that. I don't know why, but all of a sudden in my mind, I just thought, okay, so we know what's coming for Valerie in terms of like a very big storyline with her and a member of her family and women's health, right?
Oh, yeah.
No spoilers. Yeah. But it was just an interesting, like in my mind, I thought, oh, Valerie's having like this very interesting experience right now and has this very visceral reaction right now. And then down the road, anyways, we're going to see a different practice of quote female health, and it's gonna, anyway, I don't know,
she has the same pretty much visceral reaction to that as well.
I know, but it's just it was an interesting to me, like in my mind it felt like foreshadowing, even though I don't know that that could be said that that's what it was, but anyways, so yeah, it was a tough storyline.
It really was. And no offense to anyone, I don't want to carry on. Should we talk about something else?
Well,
we made it without Alex.
I know you did. Can I just say one interesting note, and I don't really have a comment about this, but interesting to note that she was very, Mrs. Farah was very supportive of Decca having the procedure done, but then they say in the epilogue at the end when Mature Jenny is speaking that Mrs. Farah chose for her own daughter not to have it done. And
I think that was just a respectful thing to a mum, like it was a mum's decision, not hers. And
To me, it was just an interesting note that like she supported it as a decision, but then she didn't ultimately end up choosing that for her own child. And like, I think that cultural, like we all have those kind of things. Like, do I hold with tradition or do I break with tradition? And it was just an interesting footnote to me that they said that. So,
and also but that she had a daughter as well.
Yeah.
But just to add to that point, and I'm sorry, Alex, that we're still talking about this. When Mr. Kenley kind of repairs her at the end, she says, like, how will a man know how I should be sewn? And also, I don't think he ever says what age she was when she had the procedure. But the fact that she's now got a daughter, she's maybe not seen what female genitalia should be like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's through having a daughter that actually she sees that she's not unclean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then just being left to be, you know, how you are is fine. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to think too, like this child is being born in the early 1960s. So in like, let's say 10 years when it would be quote time for her to go back to Somaliland to have this procedure. That's, I mean, at least for the US, that was the height of the women's liberation movement and like equality for women and stuff. And so I have to think that was pretty much happening in Britain at the same time. So there was maybe like a lot in the air, you know what I mean? Maybe there was a lot of things kind of swirling around and, you know, like getting discussed and like, you know, ways women were thinking about things that were totally like new and quote radical. And so maybe at that time, and also having spent perhaps all those intervening years in the UK, maybe she did have a different, you know, kind of view of, you know, all of it, and she had maybe thought about it in a bit of a different way. I don't know. So,
well, especially if she'd been living in England for 10 years by that point. Do you know what I mean? Right, like, it's exactly. A very different culture.
Yeah. And imagine Decca, like, coming back and then, like, growing up basically in that 10 year span. And then by the time she's in her early 20s, you know, she had the procedure done to her, but she's decided to pursue a medical degree. Like, she's decided to, like, do all of this stuff. And, like, she's a young, you know, again, like, you know, modern woman, like, living in a Western culture where it's a totally different cultural norm. Again, not to say specifically good or bad about that, but just to say it's very different. And then maybe Decca has an influence on her as well in terms of, like, deciding what to do with the baby.
Yeah.
Who's now a little girl, you know? So just kind of curious to think about. So
should we talk about Sister Mary
something
Cynthia?
Else? Yes.
Oh yeah, that the really uplifting scene with Sister Mary Cynthia, her whole story.
Oh, line. The first bit of the show where Sister Monica Jones waiting at Lynchmere to praying for her, trying to look for her.
I know, and then Cynthia's getting the electroshock therapy, and she just.
Oh, and the nurse is like, you know, why are you not fighting anymore? Like, what's with the not fighting it? And she's like, I'm just too tired. And it was just so bleak. And then she's put onto a general ward because she's improving. And that ward was absolutely horrific. And that's with improvement. Like, imagine that's the improved place you go.
Yeah, but although that ward was horrific, I did think her nurse was lovely, because when she came back from the electroshock treatment, she was like, what you need is a nap and then a nice bath. And I thought, oh, lovely. A nap.
To be fair, it's like bare minimum of kindness. And we were like, oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, they really did. Because, like, even then later on when Cynthia, like, woke up to do her prayer, she was like, oh, Ever, you have to get back in bed. And she's like, but I'm supposed to do my prayers upon waking. And she's like, yeah, I really don't care. Can you get back in bed? And then she's like, okay, I guess I will. And then she, like, realized her Bible was gone. And she's like, well, people steal stuff. Anyway, get back in bed, okay? And Cynthia was like, oh, I guess. And, like, you could tell she was just...
So, I'm not, like, being funny. How common are Bibles? Bibles are everywhere. Surely she could have been like, oh, do you know what? I'll find you another one. Like, it didn't have to be that one.
At the very least, the very least. I mean, it was just, and I kind of felt like, as I was watching the episode, that Cynthia was, quote, like, faking getting better just so that she could get the heck out of there. You know what I mean?
Because,
like,
think even she seemed a bit more lucid.
She did. Well, look,
this is the thing with the electroshock treatment, isn't it? Because they see improvement after it, but then it's not a long-term solution. And then as the episode goes on, obviously, then as she comes back to Nanata's house, she then starts to struggle again.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I just felt like she was hiding her inner life from the people at Lynchmere, because it was like, they don't care. They're not doing anything about it. Like, I'm getting the electroshock therapy, which, like, now again, in 2023, that has had a bit of an evolution as a therapy for people who have certain types of conditions. But the thing is it's still a very, very rare form of treatment. And, like, and my thing is that, like, as I was watching the episode, I was like, what specifically is the issue that Cynthia is struggling with here? Like, is it an anxiety brought on by that traumatic experience of being assaulted? Like, it seemed at times a bit like it was a depression. Like, and I'm not saying we have to have a diagnosis, but, like, I was like, what is she specific? And then she talked a lot about, like, God and, like, trying to find her way and not really believing, but then, like, also believing a lot, and then, like, feeling, you know, like, she doesn't feel like she's, you know, like, loved or, like, remembered or whatever. But then Sister Monica Jones says, but he, like, you are always with him, and, like, he does always love you and everything. And I was just like, I wish they would have given a little bit more clarity to what she was dealing with, because at times it just felt very vague. You know what I mean? I was like, is this a crisis of faith mixed with other things like that? Like,
not everything does have a solution or an answer. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think that's
common as well,
that they don't know. We'll never know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But can we talk about the reunion between Sister Mary Cynthia and Sister Julianne at the hospital, and also Sister Monica Joan? It was just absolutely...
Oh, it was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful.
But what was heartbreaking was Mrs. Archibald.
Oh, the Bible stealer.
Yeah, that one made me really sad. Was there any extra scene where they gave anything else about her? Like, were there anything was?
Well, this might have been a deleted scene for you, because the nurse explains to Cynthia that she's had a lobotomy.
Oh, we had that. Yeah.
Oh, okay. But well, that's the concept.
But that was so tragic. Like, the way she said the lobotomy, I was like, oh my god. I mean,
I'm kind of split in between calling her Sister Mary Cynthia and Cynthia, because at the end she decides she wants, when she goes to Northfield, she decides to be called Cynthia.
Yeah.
But when the nurse says that somebody's come to collect someone, and Mrs. Archibald gets so excited. She thinks it's going to be her son. I just think,
oh, I know, it's so sad. I'll tell you what, though, Jen, on the Sister Mary Cynthia thing, SMC, I'm calling her. She, I think it does show she's come quite far, because that Bible was a real comfort for her in there. And when she finds out that Mrs. Archibald's stolen it, she's just like, you keep it. Like, it was really nice of her to do that.
It was really nice.
But then she comes back. So I did think that did show some Mary improvement. But obviously, then she comes back and she is struggling at the artist's house. She thought she wouldn't be, because she's got quiet. She's got peace that she didn't have at the Lynchmere. But then she goes in to Compline and she's there and she's really struggling and she's quiet. But did you see who else was in Compline? The other nuns.
The bag.
That could be us. Just saying.
Why are they so short-staffed at the...
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Narcissus House, and there's all those nuns loitering somewhere.
I know. Okay, so the thing with Sister Mary Cynthia, too, that I notice is her bedroom. They put her in this really large, massive bedroom with, like, all this furniture and, like, carpeting and everything else. I don't know if the other girls have carpeting or not, but I just...
but they're all crammed in together.
No, yeah, I know, that's what I'm saying.
It was a big room with room for a desk.
Yeah, and a dresser and all this other stuff. That's what I'm saying. Like I hadn't noticed it as much in the past, but now when I was watching it and they put her in that room, I was like, oh, my God, this is so clearly, like, a bigger and nicer room than the other girls
get. Trixie and Valerie in one box room. I know I'm obsessed with the room situation, but and then you've got Phyllis and Barbara in another, they've had to put tape across to see who's there and they've not got enough room. All I'm saying is that fair?
Yeah, no, I agree. And the other thing that I was going to say about Cynthia is I'm glad that Dr. Turner finally got her to go to the place that he went, that he was so restorative for him, which I think is really, really good.
Yeah, no,
I like the way that that nurse came out and she was like, oh, I'm nurse something something, but everyone calls me Barry, because her last name is Barrington. I thought that was so great. And then she said, what would you like us to call you? And she said, just call me Cynthia. And girls, this is a wild conjecture, because obviously we have no idea what really happens, and I don't even know if we see Cynthia again after this, but I don't think she's going to stay a nun. I'm just putting it out there. Like, I just don't think she's going to stay a nun. I know she is, I want to start with my postulant stress and like then I can kind of rebuild from there or whatever. But
I think it's hard to stay devoted to something that you're not quite sure about why you're being devoted to it. So I think you're right.
Well, the thing
is, I do think's helped. What is she studying for?
Like her long term vows or something, I guess.
Is now the right time for her to be doing that?
Well, that's what I thought.
Sister Julianne is very much like, now is the time to rest and replenish your spirit. It's not the time to be studying and stressing about an exam.
Well, no. The thing is that, like, and I don't mean to say this in any way as a criticism of Cynthia, because I absolutely adore and love Cynthia in every way. But, like, the thing is that, like, I feel that the way that Sister Julianne is and the way that Sister Monica Joan and Sister Evangelina and even Sister Winifred are, is that they feel, like, very settled and, like, secure in their... like place as nuns first
in their faith
and then it's like, you know, whatever challenges we may have, like me being a nun and me being like in this role, like very devoted to this, you know, like life choice, is kind of like that's rock solid for them. And with Cynthia, I feel like, you know, she was a midwife first and then she kind of, you know, came to it. I mean, even Jenny, like literally real Jenny, like in her books, talked about how much like being around Sister Monica Joan and the other women, like the other nuns, like really affected her faith life and like gave her like a really powerful connection to faith that she hadn't had had before. And so then it sounds like from the books that she like went on in her real life to have like an actual faith, you know, like experience, like, you know, like she was actually like went to church and did all that kind of stuff, like, or had a very like strong spiritual life. But with Cynthia, while I don't doubt her sincerity in becoming a nun and like doing all of that, I kind of feel like it didn't have that same quality. And I just wonder if like all of this experience and everything that she's going through now is going to like maybe lead her to a different outcome where, you know, she still has a really strong connection to, you know, her faith, but that she's just not going to be a nun anymore, you know, that she's going to find another way to like fulfill a faithful vocation and do that. Again, this is just my thinking, but anyway.
Just also on the Sister Mary Cynthia, just before we move on, I want to talk about the Trixie and Sister Mary Cynthia scene, about how moving that was.
I also kind of like this, but it annoyed me that Sister Julienne was gatekeeping.
Yeah. But I will say, I don't think she was gatekeeping in a Sister Ursula kind of way, in a I'm more important than you, I'm going to look after her way. I think she was doing it purely out of making sure that Sister Mary Cynthia had lots of peace and rest. Like, I think she knew how troubled she was and she didn't want to be in trouble anymore. I think she was wrong. I think Trixie would have been absolute balm to her. But
yeah,
I think that's why she
did it. So Trixie nipping in to give her a nice soap would have been too much, but studying for exams was fine.
Well, no, but Sister Julienne didn't want her to do that. Cynthia did that on her own, remember?
Also, as we're talking about saying goodbye scenes, the Sister Monica Jones scene. Saying goodbye to Sister Mary Cynthia. Oh my goodness. Sister Monica Joan is one of the best actresses. She emotes through the screen. Oh. When she was saying goodbye to Sister Mary Cynthia, I just burst into tears.
Oh, I was sobbing the whole time, girls. I was sobbing the whole time. Forget it. Ugh, no.
It was so good.
So beautiful. So beautiful. I feel like Sister Monica Joan for a long time now. Like a long time now, because we're into series 5, I guess. Is that right? Six. Oh Lord. But yeah, like she's just been with this way for a long time, but like her evolution from like where I thought of her in the first few seasons to where she is now, I mean, night and day. Like her ability to, you know, I mean, she's still kind of like Looney Tunes at times and like a bit, you know, kind of annoying here and there, but like honestly, like her ability to just connect and like be there for other people and like just have a depth that is she really had me going. I was crying so much at this episode for so many reasons and with so many storylines, but just that one for real.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we talked about the Turners.
Oh yes,
we've kind of covered this anyway about the house move. Obviously,
I'm sorry, but there is nothing more. There is nothing more real than when Sheila walked into the house and she was like, "Oh my God, Patrick, one more box," and he's like, "There's always one more." And when I tell you, there is nothing more true than there is always one more box. Like I can't even tell you. Like there were so many times where I was like, "We're getting close to the end. We've packed it all," and then like 10 boxes. Later we would still have like one more box to pack and like, oh my word, girls.
There was a first scene that really annoyed me with the Turners. So Dr. Turner and Tim are sat at the table waiting for their food to be cooked for them, right?
Sheila, who's just recovering from bed rest.
Yeah, by Sheila saying not to talk about the Cuban Missile Crisis near because they don't want to worry her. They'll let her make food. They'll let her plan the whole move. They'll let her do everything there. They'll let her do. They're like, oh, where's the tomato ketchup? Oh, it's packed. Well, why is it packed? Well, why have you not packed it, mate? Why have you let it all go on to her?
Also, by the way, she's not only packed like probably everything, but she's like, well, me and Angela, like I've done everything for us. Like all you two have to worry about is yourselves. You know what I mean?
But that's my point. They're like, oh, don't worry her. Well, but you're absolutely fine with her worrying about the whole of the move, all logistics on that.
How is the existential threat of nuclear crisis like any like more real or pressing on her than like literally packing up every possession that she has ever owned like into her home and then organizing a whole move across town
and cooking for them?
Yes, as someone who literally has just done it, I can tell you I would be less concerned about nuclear war than I was about my home move over the last 2 months and all the headaches that caused me. Okay, like I don't have any control over nuclear bombs, but I do have control over the fact that I'm not gonna have a place to live and like a, you know, like a pot to piss in and like something to eat, you know what I mean? Like just to say I know which one's more stressful. I can tell you, it's not the one they think it is, okay?
Oh, it's horrible moving out. It's horrible.
Oh, man.
The scene with the empty house, though, when they did show those two, the box and the cot, it was a lovely scene. Like, had the house fully empty, and you didn't really realize what it looked like before, because there'd only been like statues before, haven't they, with lots of furniture.
Yeah.
Also, like, wait, can I just like beat this drum again, because I know I've said this so many times before, but like, that's like when Dr. Turner and Tim were standing in the house, and he was like, and it actually was both like, I'm gonna have a criticism, but then like a loving comment as well. Like, my criticism is like, I felt like that they again did so much like erasure over like Tim's mom and like Dr. Turner's first wife again, because they just kind of like glossed over that whole part of the fact that like this is Tim's like home where he like has literally lived his whole life, and like how like sad and intense it is to like leave that. So that's my criticism. But then my criticism is like kind of offset and or maybe even just like invalidated in my own mind, even, because, and again, I was sobbing this whole episode, but like this scene also really got me. But when Dr. Turner said that like it's not the house that has the memories, the memories come with us, and like that just really, really, really spoke to me in like such a big way, because I definitely like, I mean, I've moved many times and like I've, you know, had those feelings before, but like obviously because I'm still so close to it and everything, like the house that we left was, you know, like that was a real home for us. And like it really like, I did kind of have this feeling of like, again, even though I know better, like I did kind of think like, well, are we just going to leave like all of this behind because we're not going to be in this home anymore? And when Dr. Turner said that about like, you know, like it's not the house that has the memories, it's like us who has the memories, and like everything that we did here is going to stay with us and like come with us as we go to the new place. Like, I just found that so absolutely like beautiful and reassuring. And I just like, I obviously like really felt it intensely on like a personal level, but like also I just thought it was a beautiful thing in the show. And like, I felt like it genuinely was so loving and comforting to Tim. And like, I know we always joke about Dr. Turner being a terrible parent, but the thing is, that was actually like a really good and beautiful moment of parenting. And I just,
it does affect you, a move like that. You think it won't, but my parents moved into my house that I grew up in 2 months before I was born. So that's the only house I lived in with them. And then they moved out when I was 34. I didn't live there anymore, but they were living there. They moved out when I was 34. And I had so many dreams about that house when they first moved.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was quite traumatic for me. And I never thought it would be, because I hadn't lived there for a while. And it was just really strange. It caught me off guard because I didn't think it'd have any effect on me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I was more annoyed about the fact they were hoarding when we were trying to help them move. You know, we put stuff away to the side, and then the moment you find it again in a cupboard, I'm like, Mom!
You know, I have to be really,
1982.
I have to be really careful if I take stuff to a charity shop, because I'm like, I have to go to one that's far away, because I'm like, if I don't, my mum's just going to buy this back and be like, oh, look what I've got here.
Well, I'd say you're one of the least hoarding people I know, Bex. Like, you have a really, really good ability to, like, clear out and get rid of things. And, like, really,
if anything, it's a problem the other way. You get rid of too much.
Like, oh, I don't need that anymore. You're like, Bex, that's literally like...
Oh, speaking about hoarding, I've told you to, but I've literally spent the whole of my day yesterday in my 6-year-old daughter's bedroom getting rid of a load of old toys for Christmas. So we've actually got room for new crap to come in. So I'm just there getting rid of loads of stuff on my poor knit. Oh, it's been awful. But I spent like 6 hours yesterday just going through like 4 years worth of just ridiculousness.
Well, even she said, like, so she got on the call before we started and she was like, it took hours. It's so funny to hear this little girl just go, it took hours.
Yeah, do you know what she did during it? Just played with a load of toys. Oh, I like that. Started playing with that again.
Well, and I love
it's one of those things where you pull everything out and you're like, oh, I'm going to sort this out. And then halfway through, you're like, I don't want to do this anymore. But you've like gone past the point of return.
Yeah, that's what I poured everything out onto the floor, because I thought, if I don't do this, I'm not going to carry on. So I just poured it all out so no one could walk on it. So then I had to do it. Otherwise, we just couldn't do it that day. Also, she asked this morning for a Barbie that came with 4 kittens. I said, you've got a Barbie and you've got a load of kittens. So she's like, no, I haven't. I went into her room, and because I'd arranged everything the day before, I pulled out this drawer and counted out 6 kittens in like 2 seconds. I was like, there's your kittens. There's your Barbie. You ain't getting a Barbie with kittens for Christmas.
What was the one that she asked for last week? It was the Barbie that you could style the hair and do the makeup. What was that?
Yeah, and she had that in there again. Well, the main thing she's asked for this year is a Day of the Dead doll, so, you know, normal behavior for a 6-year-old.
Dios de la muertes, mama. I want that.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That's anyway, so sorry. Shall we move on to Trixie?
Yeah, no. Just to say, the move went off without a hitch, but their house cost literally $2,500, which, like, kill me right now with that price. And then also...
Do you know what, though? Did you see the house? It's like a council house built in the 60s. They're still you know, there's loads of houses like that still. But yeah. I thought it looked very overgrown for a house that obviously they filmed a house that was built around that time.
Not done anything
to make it look new on the outside. Like there's still loads of overgrown plants and stuff outside that have been there years. And you're a bit like, you'd have pulled that back for this scene to make it look new, wouldn't you?
Well, and what was funny was that Sheila had told the moving man the correct address, but he had written it down wrong. So he went to Kent. So they had none of their stuff.
No, I think they're saying that she wrote it really badly. Her writing's terrible.
Oh, really? Oh, I took that wrong. Okay. And then Patrick called the electric company to tell them to switch on the electrics, but I guess he told them the wrong date, or they wrote down the wrong date or something like that. And so they didn't have electricity in the house. So it's like, we don't have anywhere to sleep. We don't have anything to like, you know, have as like power. So then the last scene, which was really cute actually, was when they were all in like sleeping bags, like calling back to their camping vacation. And they were just basically like camping out in their new house for the night.
But also they were like, oh, we're so lucky. Aren't we lucky? I thought, who actually speaks like that? Who like sits there going, we're so lucky?
Well, they're kind of like, I mean, I love the Turners, but they are like sweet to the point where you're just like, every once in a while, you know, they just get to be a bit much.
And that's something coming from an American.
I know. Especially me as well, where it's like, it's never true. Too much. I know.
I was about to say, we know other Americans back. Chen is very much schmaltz.
I know. Oh, I'm the most schmaltzy, corny person. I just know I am.
So last episode before this, Trixie met Christopher Dockerill, the dentist with the... I was trying to say dentist with the mostest. That doesn't work. He had lovely tea. So she went... Did she go on a date with him?
She did, yeah.
Well, she did at the end of the episode.
Yeah, she was wearing that gold dress and
last episode.
Yeah, they did. They went on a date.
Did they?
Yeah, because she and Barbara left at the same time. Barbara was in a teal cocktail dress and Trixie was in gold, like, stretchy dress.
I didn't get it either. Like, she said she didn't want to appear too keen, but
girls, do we not remember the scene with her and Phyllis where Phyllis gives her like all this wonderful advice because he came in and he was like had the flowers and she talked to him for like 10 minutes, 15 minutes or whatever.
Yeah, but before that she'd rebuffed his phone call with Sister Julianne. She'd also been like, oh, I'm not in, or kind of thing. Like, I don't know why she was, if she'd already been on a date with him, why was she being like that?
Well, because I think she got swept up in the moment and she was like, yeah, let's go on a date. And then like after the date and it went really well, she was like, well, I don't want to appear too keen. But then Phyllis is like, well, yeah, but there's too keen, and then like actually like really putting somebody off. And she's like, I know, but like I'm just scared, like, you know, like what if, like, it's kind of, I can't remember what she said about being scared, but it was like, is it too good to be true, or like what happens if he turns out to be like such a jerk, or like I really want to be like with somebody, but then like I'm also afraid that I'm like not really ready or whatever like that, because, you know, she's still like, you know, kind of settling into things with the with I guess whatever. And then Phyllis gave her really, really amazing advice, which I just was like, oh my god, Phyllis, you were like, Phyllis is and this is the thing I love about it, even though Phyllis is a single woman, she still is the most wise relationship advice giver of anybody on the show. Anybody on the show, bar none. That is my opinion. She speaks to relationship so well. And actually, when she said to Trixie about like not being afraid and like going for it, it really made me think of how, like, even though she got burned, like she went for it with like Mr. What's his face, the one from the Spanish class. You know, she's willing to put herself out there. You know, like
just talking about dating as well in the '60s. Like, how brutal was it that Christopher Dockerill had to go and knock on a door with some flowers, be greeted by a nun, have a massive like lecture about mercury fillings, then Nurse Crane's like, oh great, you're here, come in, and he has to go and speak to these two old women. Nowadays they just text or swipe on Tinder. They don't know how good they've got it. In the '60s they had some graft. They know that's the true meaning of graft. None of this Love Island rubbish. They're grafting.
I don't know if I wish we could go back to that time or not. I don't know if I'd want... I mean, modern dating is absolutely terrible.
With him, because she was like, there's no... She didn't want him to look a fool having to walk away with a bouquet.
Yeah, she advocated.
And I love the way she called him Trixie's gentleman caller.
I know.
But I love the way it took basically a threat of a nuclear war to get her to ring him.
But also, how good was Nurse Crane with the cubs, considering that she didn't want to do it?
I know.
Oh, she's amazing. She's amazing.
Also, can we just talk about the date? So Christopher Dockerill's like, we can go anywhere in London, anywhere at all, do anything you want. And she just wanted to sit on his car bonnet and snog him. And I'm a bit like, what about the Ritz, mate? You could go to the Ritz, or do you know what I mean? I don't want to sit on a car bonnet. Get piles.
I thought that was kind of cute. Like, you know, I thought it was nice. I liked when he put her. I liked when he put her coat around him. When he put her coat around her, I guess. Yeah. That could never happen to me. The coat wouldn't fit. It would like barely be like a scarf around my neck.
Now, did you see the scene of Fred and Violet dancing in the home as well?
Oh, they were so great. Oh, wait. So actually, let's just transition just slightly. You guys, Fred's overalls, again, make like another appearance.
I clock them every time now.
Oh my God. I freaking love those overalls.
It's like I'm looking at you.
The thing that made me laugh, like, so the Cuban Missile Crisis, actually, it is what prompted Trixie and Chris to go on the date and everything. The thing with Christopher that I keep on thinking is, like, I feel like he's one of those guys that, like, this is going to sound really rude, but like, if I saw him, I'd be like, oh yeah, he is cute, but then like I wouldn't think he was like that amazing. But like as he gets to be like a sweeter and sweeter guy, like it's kind of where you think he's like much, much better looking. Do you know what I mean? You know,
he has, like, yeah, good looking. I think they've chosen him because he's really good looking, if I'm honest.
Well, like, he is really good looking, but I don't know, there's something like, this is gonna sound so rude, but like he's very handsome, but there's something also slightly kind of like goofy to me about his like way.
I mean, if you're listening, actor who plays Christopher or any of his family, we do apologize. That is not a podcast endorsed.
I don't mean in a bad way. It's just, it's one of those things where like to me, like if you said like I think like Tom is like,
how many likes are you gonna get in this? Sorry.
I think Tom is like a bit more like kind of classically like good looking in a certain type of way than Christopher. But I feel like, and Tom is a sweet guy too, so that's not a criticism of Tom. But like, I feel like Christopher is one of those guys that like, because of his personality and everything he is and does and like all that kind of stuff like that, then he just ends up like going up and up and up. And then like when you look at him, you're like, oh my gosh, most handsome guy in the room. Like, no questions asked. It didn't mean it to be like that rude of a thing, but just like, I feel like Tom, like Christopher is kind of one of those guys that like grows on you over time, which I feel like he kind of did with Trixie, honestly.
To be honest, but anyways, I'm just dazzled by his teeth. Ever since I saw his teeth in that episode, he's got really good teeth.
His teeth are a 10, like unequivocal 10. Yeah. But the thing that I found really interesting about this, and this, oh, I remember what I wanted to mention about Cynthia before we moved on. So the Cuban Missile Crisis is interesting that it's happening. I kind of think of the Cuban Missile Crisis as being a very American thing because it's like our history and like it was JFK, and not that it's like only ours. I don't mean it that way, but just like, I wouldn't have thought that, like, I mean, we get taught about it in school and everything. We did. But I just didn't, I guess, watching this episode, I was kind of surprised at how big of an impact it was having globally, you know, which makes total sense in hindsight, but like at the same time, it just hadn't registered with me that would be the way that it was. But, and this is like purely a coincidence, but it was interesting to me that they referenced a lobotomy in the episode about the Cuban Missile Crisis, because one of the things that about it is that JFK, one of his sisters, I actually looked this up while we were on our break, was Rosemary Kennedy was his younger sister, and she had, you know, some mental health issues or whatever. I'm not 100% sure, but there was a lot of things going on with her, and she actually had a lobotomy performed on her, and she was never the same after that, and she was always kind of hidden away after it happened, and she was really young when it happened. She was like 23.
I knew this because of TikTok, you know, our main source of information on this.
Yeah, basically the modern encyclopedia that is TikTok, and it was a huge shame and like grief and terrible legacy of their family that this happened to her, because as soon as it was over, they realized, you know, how terrible it was and like what had really been done to her. But it was just interesting to me that, even though I'm sure it wasn't really related, but like that they had a woman who was a victim of a lobotomy in the episode. And then anyway,
well, the Kennedys are fascinating though, aren't they?
Oh, the Kennedys are a fascinating family, like a truly fascinating family. Yeah. But
just to get, so while we're talking about Kennedys, let's go carry on with the Cuban Missile Crisis. So Nurse Crane comes in with the Cubs, and Fred is just starting up his CDL meeting at the same time. It's like on the end of the Cubs. He's just setting it up while the Cubs are still in there and the CDL are going to meet up. Well, Nurse Crane blasts Fred and the CDL for having the nuclear poster around the Cubs. And I just thought it was actually, I love Fred, but it was a bit of a misthought by him. And I just really appreciated the way she obviously loves them and went to bat for them.
Yeah.
I was loving the fact that Fred was advocating that they should all paint their windows white because that was going to deflect a nuclear blast.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I literally was like, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my whole life. I was like, as if white paint on glass windows is going to do absolutely
Have you ever read the book Threads?
No.
I was obsessed with it. So when we were in our last year at primary school, we read the book Threads. Looking back, what were my teachers thinking, giving like 10-year-olds this book about nuclear war? It was horrific. It's a really dark, dark, dark thing. And there was a TV show about it as well on BBC. Really dark. But I was obsessed with nuclear war when I was like 11 onwards for a little bit. Now we know where my daughter gets the dark side from. But yeah, it was absolutely horrific. But they had all tips like that in that as well, like what you needed to do, get stuff to board your windows up. And I was there having dreams about us doing it in our house, where we do it in our house. And even to this day, I still think about where we'd go and what we'd do. We've got a cupboard under the stairs. That's where we'd go. But that kind of thing, like thinking about it all the time. Yeah.
You were very much like this, because when we lived in uni, you would quiz us on what our escape route out of the house would be. And you lived in the loft. You were going to, there was like in the eaves where there were cupboards, you were going to, if an attacker came into your room, you were going to get into the eaves, crash through the floor into my room.
Into your bed, yeah, onto your bed. Yeah. You had a, yeah.
And then you were going to exit the building before they'd even known where you'd gone.
Yeah, the other thing is I think about if armed robbers come in, where would I go? What would I do? Like, I'm going to be taken hostage. Again, I'll tell you why. When we were little, do you remember Terry Waite and John McCarthy?
Yes.
They were taken hostage. I was obsessed with them. And I used to watch the news to find out if they'd, you know, been let, set free and stuff. Again, my parents are not responsible there. So I was obsessed with it and really worried about them. So that's where that's come from as well. Like, I'm going to be kidnapped. No one would want to kidnap me. But
yeah. Yeah. When I lived in New York, my friend and I, one of my best friends, she lived in the apartment right above me, and we were in a building. So I was on the second floor and she was on the third floor. And for the first time that... her boyfriend ended up moving in, but at the beginning when it was just her, we decided that we were going to have like an action plan if like either one of us had anything happen to us. Like, it was like, here's how we're going to call each other on, like, you know, the phone, and then like, you know, what like signals we'll send each other in the building to alert the other one that, you know, something has happened, and like one of us can like take refuge in the other one's apartment if anything goes on wrong or whatever like that. And, you know, yeah, nothing ever happened, but we definitely did that work for sure.
No, it's not just me being an absolute weirdo.
No.
One more thing I want to say about Nurse Crane, saying that she's so Sheila had these magazines from that she was doing a big clear out, and she brought them to the clinic saying, oh, there's some nice fashion editorials in there. And Nurse Crane said, I've never needed an editorial to tell me how to put myself together, and I've never had any complaints. Just made me absolute lol, the shade.
Such a boss. I love her.
Who I was not liking was Sister Winifred, because she's learning to drive.
Oh, that was lols though, with the cushion.
It was funny, but I didn't like the attitude she had towards Nurse Crane, considering that Sister Winifred has just decided that she's going to learn to drive, and then she's going to drive Nurse Crane's car.
Well, she's acting like people are making her learn how to drive, and it's like, no babes, nobody asked for this. Like, you're the one who wanted it, and now you're acting like it's this big chore and everything. Like, you don't have to learn how to drive if you don't want to. Like, my goodness.
It's true. Right. Yeah. Shall we do Heroes and Zeros?
Yes.
Yes.
Who's going first?
I'll do mine first.
Oh my goodness. That's the biggest shock of the series.
Shock and surprise. Shock and surprise. Okay, I like to do my zeros first so I can end on a high note. So my zero is going to be, there's a lot going on this episode that really makes me sad, but my zero is going to be the lady who had the lobotomy.
Mrs. Archibald.
Mrs. Archibald, yeah. There's just a lot of sad stuff.
She only took a Bible.
I know, and I just felt really sad for her. You know, like, she had the lobotomy, that was terrible. She also, like, kept
waiting. Why are you making
somebody...
a zero?
No, I think, well, she's saying
what's because
been
of
done...
what happened to her. Not,
oh,
like,
not the fact that she stole off Cynthia.
No, I just, like, what happened to her is the zero, and I just feel really sad for her. Yeah, because she was a victim, and like, she had that horrible procedure, and then she was waiting for somebody that was never going to come, and then even when she had like a moment of connection with Cynthia, which was very sweet, then that was like Cynthia leaving, and then she knew that was like, she was gone, and I just feel like she's probably a very like lonely person, and like, Lynchmere is just a very like cold and I think relatively unsympathetic place, so I felt really bad for her, and like, I just, my heart really goes out to people who are, you know, in that kind of situation. So okay, so that's my zero. Very, very sad. My hero is Phyllis. I just love her. I just absolutely adore Phyllis so much. Like, if I could be the Barbara to her, if I just would every single day. Like, I think her advice is always so great. Like, she is the relationship expert. Like, she's helped Patsy and Delia. She's helped Trixie. Like, she's helped Barbara and Tom. Like, she just, and then she just is like, and even like the Cubs, like, she's so protective of them in exactly the right way. And like, you know, she like, she never like goes easy, but she's always so like loving and comforting. And, you know, she's just such a great lady. And I just love her, and I feel like she just had like so many moments to shine in this episode. She's also hilarious, and anyway, I love her like insane man. Like curls in her hair that she pins up with like all the cotton around her ear lobes and everything. It's just so funny. So I just love her. That's it.
Thanks.
My zero is going to be Dr. Turner.
Okay.
Because he constantly is aware of what's stressing Sheila out and what could be done to help her, but never does anything personally to help the situation.
Yeah.
He's involved in that. That's need to worry about that. That's not his business.
And then my hero. Now, I feel like my hero should be Val because she stood up to Nadifa, but then at the end, she was very condescending to Nadifa.
Mm.
So I'm not going to have her. I was going to have Phyllis. I'm going to have Fred. Because he kept going to collect Sister Monica Joan from the Lynchmere. And I just thought that was... And you could see that he'd literally just rolled out of bed and gone to get her.
Yeah. And he wore those amazing overalls again.
So my hero was going to be Phyllis and my zero was going to be Dr. Turner for the both of them. So I will change mine. My hero is going to be Sister Mary Cynthia for coming through complete adversity and doing amazing. Yeah. And I really, really hope that she does well at the Northfield.
I hope she's
my hero, and I just think you know, she's getting herself, she's really trying, and I just think, bless her, I just love her. My zero is going, it was going to be the doctor because I don't like him, but at the same time he wasn't
the doctor at St. Cuthbert's.
Yeah. Okay. But he wasn't actually that bad to Nadifa. That's just the way he is, so he wasn't actually terrible. So my zero is going to be Trixie for just basically ghosting, 1962's ghosting of Christopher Dockrell, making him go into the thing, into a nunnery with flowers. Like, my goodness, mate, what, making a man work? You know what I mean? I know it worked out fine, but it's amazing
that ghosting didn't exist until recently, because honestly, like, no better time to ghost than like in the past when, like,
if you remember, what do you call his husband, Marnie's husband, he ghosted.
Yeah, but like, that's the thing, like, back then, like, you could literally like up and leave and no one would be able to know where you were or find you, like, at all. Like, you could just, I mean, think about like the cliche about like, oh, you know, like, so and so went out to like pick up a gallon of milk and they never came home, you know what I mean? You just like never see them ever again. Like, it's just wild that ghosting didn't exist until long ago. Yeah.
Anyway, right, just really quickly, I've got some comments, listeners. Okay, so Jane on Instagram says, I love the podcast Recall the Midwives, it's so good, please continue releasing episodes, please. Well, Jane, we're recording one right now and you're mentioned on it.
Oh
yeah. I've also got a message from one of our listeners who you actually sent cards to, and she's received yours, Jen. Loves it, sent photos, was very, very pleased. Becky, you're slacking.
Yeah, I'm still in the post.
Well, listen, it's up to the post office gods now. So she'll get it in just a little bit, I'm sure.
Yeah. Okay. Now, also on Instagram, we had a message from Lucy who says, hey girls, I just wanted to say I'm 18. Well, I'm not being funny, but we are down with the kids.
Oh my God.
And I've recently moved to uni and just wanted to say I absolutely love Call the Midwife, and your podcast is something I've found, because uni can be lonely, but I always pop your podcast on. It makes me feel so safe and just less alone. I love laughing along with you guys. So just a massive thank you. Please don't stop your podcast. And thanks for keeping me company. Now, I did actually reply being like, oh my goodness, you'll get loads of friends. And she's like, no, I've got loads of friends. It's fine. It's just but like at night and stuff, it gets a bit lonely. I was like, all right, fair enough.
It, you know what though, like, good for you, because honestly it is hard to kind of like go out there on a limb, like, and like leave home and like start that process of like being in college. And just to say, like, I know you're doing amazing, but like, we're rooting for you, and like, it will get better. And like,
she already loves it, Jen. She's absolutely living her best life.
I know, but it's just, I remember that time of life, and like, I just want her to like love it all.
Well, I actually did a story tour about how me and you didn't really know each other until like just before Christmas. So it'd been a few months.
I know.
And then she was like, yeah, no, honestly, I'm fine. I was like,
Well, I'm glad we can be part of the friends she has at uni.
Okay. Now, another one from Rebecca on Instagram. She says, yeah. I have been giggling at the absolute hatred of Sister Ursula. I don't know who that could have been. As much as I also hated the character, I also felt it refreshing for a somewhat realistic version of a nun. In that time frame and before, they were horrible, and she's totally right. Just think mother baby homes in Ireland. Although I love a calm Sunday show, the reality is they may not have all been that accepting and open. So for me, it was nice to see some reality of some nuns. So that's actually a very good point.
That
she also says, also just wanted to say thank you all for my weekly calm. Love it.
Actually, maybe that's why we don't see any of the bonus nuns from Compline, because they're the awful ones.
Yeah they suck. Yeah.
They're like, we refuse to go and help a mother having a baby. Now, two people, Stephanie Nicholson and Erin Jones, have also said, Jen, when you were saying about the Bobby baby thing, Apparently, yeah. It's the opening song from the musical Company. So that could be why you thought it was something.
I worked on Company when I was in theater. Oh my gosh, Bobby Baby. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much, listeners. I did Company in one summer stock that I did when I was young. Oh my God. Wow. That was like, amen to you.
So we'll have more listeners' contributions and questions and messages and stuff next week. I'm more into the throngs of it now. I've got my head around the surgery. We're getting there. So we will do more of it. But yeah, so next week we shall be doing and watching and talking about Series 6, Episode 7. We would love for you to listen along.
Yeah. We're getting so close to the end of the season and a Christmas episode.
Yeah.
Exciting. And it's almost Christmas.
It is.
We're really going to try to have the Christmas episode air in time for Christmas so that we can all...
It's not a very Christmassy episode, I'll tell you that.
Oh, I forget. I don't know.
Christmas is fleeting.
Well, it's
my favorite episode. I keep rewatching it. I find it really comforting.
Well, that's the beauty of this show. Right. Thank you so, so much for listening. We'll see you next week, everyone.
See you next week.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.